Let's get to our guest for the half hour. Ben Emmons is with us. He is Senior Portfolio Manager, also the head of Fixed Income Macro Strategies at New Edge Wealth, joining us from LA. Ben, nice to have you on the program on a holiday. Happy Thanksgiving. Hope things are well with you. Talk to me about your reading on these Fed minutes. They seem pretty dovish, no?
Hey, Doug. Thank you. Thanks very much for having me back. They read, I guess, more dovish from the tone that Powell struck in that press conference the last time, right? When the statement came out, the market reacted favorably, then Powell started really speaking to higher rates and quite hawkish. But these minutes do reflect that view that Powell has. But overall, the assessment, particularly by the Fed staff, was about, well, yes, the economy is really slowing down. The risk of recession is increasing. They actually made a forecast that the unemployment rate could go above the Fed's estimate of the natural unemployment rate by, say, 2024. And then you saw really yields tumbling once I think those headlines started to come out. So that did read, I guess, dovish that way. But in the end, Doug, though, the division within the Fed is very low, if not nihil, really because they are all on the same board that they have to drive up rates still further from here, meaning like a higher terminal rate than what's being communicated before. And that seems to be now the 5.25% range or about. I think that was an important aspect of this minute. Yeah.
Yeah, Ben, I think you used the analogy of aircraft, at least you did, and Patrick Waller did, which you at the moment are also saying is the rising star, as it were.
Yes, and I think that analogy is very accurate, right? So they're still in going to, cruising altitude, if you will, right? We're still up in the plane, up in the air. And we haven't really gotten to that point where then the plane starts to like sort of be in an ascent and be stable, right? So I think he's right that, they still have more to go. And so this is why that yield curve inversion is getting worse every day. Right? We hit negative 80 basis points in intraday and after the minutes came out. So I think it shows that the market is willing to price even more inversion from here, probably will surpass the 100 basis points in the next week or so as we're heading towards core PC and payrolls, right? And again, reflection of the market understands the Fed wants to get to a much higher rate than what they've been communicating in the past. That was, again, the message from the minutes, from what I thought.
Even economists at the Fed are now telling members of the committee that the risk of recession has grown to nearly 50-50. So we're essentially at a coin toss here, Ben. I mean, the question now, how deep? Do you think it's going to be severe?
It may be, Doug. Like, they do point out that that there are some people in the Fed that are worried that if you get to really high levels of rates, that there's a lot of instability created, right? And then that makes the downturn even worse, right? If you get financial instability. So that is something that we have to keep in mind. At the moment, the data does not reflect any of that, right? There's slowdown, but the GDP data is strong, spending data is strong. Confidence has been very negative because of inflation, but inflation is starting to moderate to an extent. So we don't deal actually with an economy that's heading towards a cliff, right? But, they have to be careful. And therefore, they're putting that out in statements and minutes and speeches that, it could get worse.
Ben, was the market reaction warranted?
To some extent, Rich, but I would say that, if you're getting a 10-year yield now drifting lower, say, towards sort of 3.5% that may happen near term, I would say that would be probably too low from where the Fed wants to go with rates. Because even though the yield curve is very inverted, the two-year yield will probably drift higher from here, reflecting this higher terminal rate, and the 10-year yield should be pulled up again. Right? So it was, I think, a reaction to the future, but not to the present.
Let's continue the conversation on the Fed, Ben, before we pivot to Asia and bring the dollar into the conversation. We saw a lot of weakness yesterday as those yields moved lower across the curve. Have we seen, given everything that we're describing, have we seen peak dollar?
I think I've seen it temporarily, Doug, because since the middle of October, indeed, the dollar index peaked. And I think a lot of it's explained by the way the sterling has appreciated because of all the distress that was priced out of that currency as the budget issues were taken care of and the Bank of England stepped in. And then obviously the reaction in the euro is very notable too, to the ECB being basically committed to start raising rates with 50 to 75 basis points at a time. So I think that explains the interest rate differential change there on the dollar. But if you think about the global economy, the dollar, I think, is starting to react to what's happening with this lockdowns in China, because it does come through PMI data. Also, and you saw it in the services PMI, for example, just before the holiday. You know, that does show that there's an impact from the global slowdown coming through PMI data here. So I think if you take that together, and again, plotting the dollar against, say, the 2/10 U curve, then there is a expectation that, yes, the economy is moving to a slower path in the future that should lead to slower rate hikes, therefore a weaker dollar than what we have been. But let's face it, we also had the strongest dollar, you know, in at least 10, 15 years, right? So it's definitely that reason, too, that the dollar's just come off its high, but it's still really strong for more than a year ago.
Ben, okay. Let's say that we've had the dollar being driven up, particularly against the euro and arguably as well sterling. I'm not going to go with talk about the yen because of interest rate differentials. What time and when do, let's say, economic performance differences start to play a role?
I think it starts to play a role right now, Rich. I think that I noted that as the yield curve continues to invert further, that as much as that is all monetary policy tightening from the Fed still priced in, there's now, I think, we're getting to a point where the yield curve is also really signaling the slowdown. And I think comparing the yield curve to what's happening in forward-looking indicators like ISM, PMI, you can see it there, a similar trend. And I think that is where now the dollar starts to react to as well. Like the recognition that this 4.3% on GDP now that we still have for this quarter, which is much of a boost from trade and inventory, that is changing, right? That there's going to be more slowdown. So we're right here now. So meaning there could be somewhat more downside for the dollar from here.
Speaking of downside, with the COVID situation in China getting worse, I mean, we're looking at the high likelihood of a much weaker Chinese economy. Ben, what kind of drag will that have for the global economy?
That could be significant because, you know, that is, was like that a number of years ago as well, where, you know, China is and continues to be a significant driver of global growth. So I would say, estimated, they think it's a 0.7% of global GDP. That's pretty substantial, right? If you continue to stay in these really harsh lockdowns, with the only benefit, I do say that the supply chain pressures have at the moment at least eased quite a bit. And that's also, I think, part of just the slowdown that's happening overall. You know, the demand is waning, therefore that easing of supply chains. But what we can conclude too, Doug, is that these COVID policies that we have in China, it will take some time to get completely out of it, but they will change, obviously. And there was a week ago a lot of news out that they are willing to start vaccination with using Pfizer vaccines. And that, I think, is an important turnaround in that COVID policy. So near-term weakness will drag on the global economy. But I think next year, if China economy fully reopens, that would be initially a boost to the global economy through trade and commodity demand.
Rarely, Ben, I don't think ever has the United States actually been, had it import a recession. They've exported all of them, it would seem. And the next one always comes from somewhere that you don't expect. It's always out of left field. You prepare for the last war as opposed to the one which actually arrives.
Yeah, for sure, Harish. And, you know, the shock of Ukraine, we've sort of really worked that off now, right? And will there be another shock, right? That's to be seen, but possible. And, you know, the next still risk that's coming along is that if it's indeed leading to finally an official recession in China, yes or no, that could be a big risk, right? Or it is this sudden flip of the strength of the economy we've seen currently in the United States getting closer to the cliff and all of a sudden everything turns here and becomes a recession. I think those are like macro risks ahead of us that are, the market is definitely getting ready for. And as much as it's well telegraphed out there, it will always come as a surprise, right? And you know, the bullishness you're seeing in equities and bonds, they may change then quick.
Ben, very, very, very quickly, in 10 seconds, how where will the S&P 500 be at the end of December?
I still think it's going to be around 4,000 or so. We'll may break the 4,000 briefly, but then we'll fall right back.